No, there's not a ghost. But this space was the last ever real world location.
Oh, yeah, we know. Yeah, we know.
And I always think about, like,
what
oh,
went
if these
down?
walls could talk, and then I realize, oh, wait, that was the whole point of the real world.
Welcome to Death by Millennial. I'm Dana.
And I'm Tiffany.
We're two designers taking a closer look at the industries millennials are supposedly killing. And today we're killing offices.
Thank you for calling the offices of Death by Millennial. No one's available to take your call, and they never will be. Goodbye.
Market Watch says that by 2020, 50% of the U.S. workforce will not be working in offices. So where are we going to be, Dana?
We're freelancing, we're driving Ubers in the gig economy.
We're working remotely.
Yep. Is it really our fault?
This one, I'm going to say resoundingly no.
Surprise, surprise, we say no.
Absolutely not. Well, it's like our fault, but we just reacted to what was given to us.
Yeah.
I think the economy really failed us on this one.
Yeah, we've got a lot of thoughts on that whole situation. So where are these people who are freelancing and working remotely, where are they actually going every day?
So there, you know, you can work from home, but what we're going to be exploring in this episode is co-working spaces. And we're going to be talking to Carrie from The Riveter.
Carrie Murphy.
That's a great interview. She was so lovely to talk to.
Yep. She's the chief marketing officer at The Riveter. She was super great.
And then we have a couple little mini interviews for people who work in co-working offices, and also one who decided not to. It wasn't her steez. So let's get into it.
According to the Freelancers Union annual report, 42% of millennials freelanced last year, which is more than any other generation.
Have you freelanced, Dana?
Nope.
I have. It sucks. It sucks for me. A lot of people like it.
Yeah.
A lot of people are really good at it, but they are very organized.
Self-motivated.
And on top of it. Like, I love designing. I hate everything that goes around it.
Yeah, it's a lot of extra stuff to deal with, it sounds like.
Like, having to figure out billing, I can barely fill out my timesheets.
You are really bad about that. Sorry, Lisa.
Sorry. I feel like I know a lot of people who freelance, and I'm going to go on a hashtag millennial rant here.
Uh-oh.
Millennial rant!
And I'm going to say, if you wanted, and this is, I'm sorry, baby boomers, I think Gen X is, like, not really to blame for this, but baby boomers, you might want to put your earmuffs on.
Uh-oh.
Because I'm going to rant, and it's going to sound like whining.
Here we go. Go for it.
If you wanted millennials to keep buying houses, cars, diamonds, and napkins, then maybe you should have figured out the economy for us and not screwed us.
Left us with a big pile of mess.
If you wanted millennials to stay at one job their entire time, then make it possible.
Maybe a pension would be nice. What are pensions?
What are pensions?
That does not exist anymore.
It would be great to have pensions. It would be great to have raises and bonuses every year. It'd be great to be able to, like, rise to the top of your company. But there is no janitor to CEO stories anymore. Millennials are the most educated generation, and we paid a pretty penny for it. According to the New York Times, in 1974, in today's figures, the median family income was $62,000. Price for private university for a year was $10,300, and public university was $2,500 a year. Now, the median family income is $64,000.
Whoa.
A nice raise of $2,000.
In 40 years. What?
Yeah. And university, private university, is $31,000 a year.
Yep.
And public university is $9,000 a year.
And it's just going up.
It's quadrupled.
Yep.
It's insane. Why is it so expensive?
Yeah. It's crazy. And that's going to change, like, each generation's whole perspective on the workforce, really.
Not only is it hard to find jobs, get your first job, keep your job, it's also really expensive to pay off your education. Millennials got totally screwed.
Especially when you're like a young adult and you're trying to figure out how to handle your expenses and like your life. And all of a sudden you have this giant payment.
Yeah. And who knows what they wanted to do when they went to college? You're like 18, making this like dumb decision.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, I'm going to go spend, you know,
$30,000.
Almost $100,000 on education.
Yeah.
For 4 years. And have to pay it off the rest of my life.
And hope I get a job when I graduate.
Yeah. My job out of graduation was catering.
Whoa, really? Yeah. Mine was a grocery store. A really fancy one. Shout out to Marzix Fine Foods.
Okay, so I'm going to end my hashtag millennial rant and just say that some people like freelancing, but I feel like a lot of millennials would love just a regular job, one with a salary, one with vacation, one with benefits, and an office even.
Yep. So many people are freelancing, whether that's by choice or they were kind of forced into it in some scenarios based on the economy.
Or they could have been entrepreneurs and like made their own way.
Because they also might have been forced to. Or maybe they're passionate about it. But anyway, other people are working remote, and that's something that's more popular these days that companies offer their employees with the rise of
technology.
Yeah.
The internet. Yeah, basically you can work halfway around the world now, which is awesome, and like still talk to your team.
You can be in your PJs, button up shirt on top. No one would know.
It's a business mullet.
It is.
Business on the top, party on the bottom.
Ooh. But yeah, technology has made it easier access to tools. So you can work from your phone. You could work from a coffee shop on your phone or on a laptop.
You could work in Thailand. I had a coworker at my old job who worked remotely, and he had never traveled before. And our job was like, you know, as long as you do your work, you can work from wherever you want.
Did he get a lot done?
Yeah, he got all of his work done. It was really easy to communicate with him, even though we were in different time zones. I think you just have to be really adamant about, you know,
proactive.
Yeah, really proactive, and really just like list out all the things you're doing, all the things you need to do. You really just need to communicate very well.
And stay organized.
Yeah. And, yeah. Like, don't leave your teammates hanging if you're working in a different time zone and if they need something. So, in my opinion, when I worked in web design, it was pretty easy to work remote.
Yeah. It does seem like it kind of depends on your job. Yeah. And a lot of people have jobs that it works really well with, and they really like that flexibility.
Yeah, I think it'd be a little harder for us to work remotely.
Yeah.
Just because we are very hands-on and we do build like three-dimensional spaces.
But Google Slides we use all the time, and that helps when people are on our team are traveling and keeps things rolling.
Yeah. I think that was like a really difficult transition for a lot of designers.
Yeah.
Because like making everything in InDesign, you can really
polish it up.
It looks so beautiful.
Yeah.
And then with Google Slides, you can't control the line height that well.
I totally remember that switch, and like, people being able to see your work in progress, too, feels weird. Mm-hmm. And you feel, like, defensive about that at first. And then you let go and you're like, well, I can see everyone else's stuff, too. And they know it's not done yet. So it creates more trust on your team, really.
Yeah. And, yeah, it's just you work so much faster.
Way more efficient.
And you're a lot less precious about ideas.
And you get feedback way, way more often, I feel like. Anyway, so all these groups, freelancers, people who work remote, even entrepreneurs, and they all have one thing in common, which is that they have to define their own work environment. And that's kind of based on how they're most productive, the type of flexibility they need, and the community and culture that they're looking for. These are all things that co-working spaces really value and highlight as major benefits and kind of draw people in. So to better understand it, we decided we'd talk to a few people who have worked at co-working spaces.
Today, you'll hear from Emma, a marketing manager, Lindsay, a freelance copywriter, Stephanie, a UX designer and business owner, and David Jackmanberger, a portfolio manager.
I was at a very normal office environment, a brick building downtown Western Avenue, Seattle, and our whole division, the utility solutions division of that company, was acquired by another one, and we had to quickly get out of that building. So we were put in the Columbia Tower, but inside of a floor, so we didn't have any windows, and there were like 10 of us that are regularly in the office, so that was tough. And then it took some searching, and we found this is the best option for us. My office, you know, it's just 10 people working in our space, it's pretty hard to get a good office that you can afford for just 10 people. So that works really well. And then we do have our own private offices within WeWork, so that is great. I don't know if I would like it as much if I was just using the hot desks and always out and about with being social with people. So it is nice that I can retreat. So overall, I think it's great for us. I would not move back to the middle of the Columbia Tower for sure.
So we heard David talk about how he would not go back to a traditional office space really because it was poorly designed. Here are Lindsay's thoughts on that.
The design of the hub is a huge reason why I chose it, actually. I spent my last 3 years working in an office that was underground in a basement, and so is my apartment where I was doing all my work from home stuff. So to be able to come somewhere where there are huge windows, it feels really light and airy and expansive. I think better in here. I think my work is better for it.
Flexibility in space is really important, but also flexibility in how people work is something we are talking a lot more about now. Here's Stephanie with some really great anecdotes.
My theory is that most people can't just sit down and bang out work for 8 straight hours, but they want to, if they're with other people, they want to make it seem as though they can. So they do their non-work sort of, I'm just going to let my brain chill for a minute, also in front of the computer. So, you know, I'm much more likely to, and I want to say I'm a work in progress on this. Like if I'm on deadline, I'm not always going to be great about getting up or taking, you know, just like stretching or whatever. But I feel very self-conscious about that in an office environment. And that's just not a factor when I'm at home. Also, I feel less time pressure. Like mornings are really hard for me. So, you know, I don't feel like not only do I not have to account for variability in the commute, but also I don't feel like I need to be as put together.
A huge part of work is socializing. And how do you do that if you're working remotely or if you're working in a co-working space where no one's working towards the same goal?
I think my biggest fear when going from a company that had its own space to a smaller company was that I would miss out on a lot of the programming and just like the community that you get working at a larger company. And I feel like my favorite thing about a co-working space is that it answers to that. So like, yeah, it's cool. I have cold brew and kombucha on tap and I have like really beautiful designer furniture all around me and whatever, but I also get to have a weekly happy hour and I get to interact with people who are either in like the coding school that's in the same building as me or who work for any number of companies from like environmental nonprofit companies to big tech companies who support people who have solar panels on their houses and I mean all sorts of weird random things. But yeah, it just really answers to that lack of community for smaller companies.
So it's really awesome that co-working spaces provide a community, but Stephanie has some great insights into how you can find community outside of work.
Before I started working from home, I hadn't realized how much of my social life was with my coworkers and how much that kind of drove what was on the menu in terms of like what we would talk about when we were hanging out. There's plenty of things that I really value that have nothing to do with my career. And I don't think it really gets a lot of nurturing. And in some ways, I felt a little guarded in my work environments talking about, you know, just like questioning things or, you know, being a little bit more hippy dippy with stuff. I think, you know, working in tech, that's not, it doesn't always really go over well. And in some ways seems like a social liability. But when I'm in my, you know, Tai Chi class, I can totally let my freak flag fly. And, you know, it's embraced. It's not like, ooh, you know, like I feel uncomfortable. I mean, it sounds so cheesy, but I feel more whole because I don't have to think about how I'm presenting it so much.
I'm proud to introduce Carrie Murphy, who will be our industry voice for this episode. Carrie was one of the first female leaders I encountered in the workplace, and she was super impressionable and was always super positive and inspiring. As you'll hear, she's a passionate individual who is truly making the world a better place, which is why she's currently the CMO at The Riveter.
The Riveter is a growing co-working company founded up the street here in Seattle, Washington. They are built by women for everyone and are a successful example of a value-based community. Let's get to it.
Hell yeah!
Hi, Carrie.
Hi, Dana.
So good to see you.
You too!
I'm so excited to have you on. Yeah, we used to work together, so this is a lot of fun to see her again and to introduce her to Tiffany because she's such a girl boss and just someone I've always looked up to. So thanks
for being
on. Oh
my gosh, that's ridiculous and sweet of you to say. And I'm so happy to be sitting here with you.
Yeah.
And at the Riveter.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
We're at the Riveter. I didn't mention that.
It's a beautiful space.
It is gorgeous. It's actually my first time in here.
What?
Yeah. And I live really close by, so that's really bad.
Well, yes, A, that's quite bad, and B, welcome. Yeah, this is the Riveter Capitol Hill. It was our flagship.
Yeah. How did you even get involved with the Riveter?
After traveling for a while with my husband and experiencing life just for life's sake without being burned out.
Important.
Trump got elected.
Yeah.
And it sent me into a total tailspin. I mean, and my story is not unique by mm-hmm. any stretch, but my version of a tailspin is, okay, what am I doing? And what I know how to do, I guess I've discovered, is basically being a marketer is like being an organizer. So I basically just went full bore into activism and political insanity. I mean, I just like,
yeah.
One of my political rebel rousing groups was having meetings at the Riveter, and the founder and CEO, Amy Nelson, was at one of our meetings. My marketing brain was 100%. I mean, we sat down and immediately had a mind meld, and I was again talking about, have you thought about doing blah, blah, blah? And then suddenly I was consulting, and then suddenly I was the CMO. I'm in such a ridiculously privileged position of being able to channel my passion for cultivating teams and building things with my values system of upending bullshit.
Which so. I think that's an awesome thing. It's like, yeah, you had this company before where you were really good and really great at what you did. And when you get to align that with your values, that's like a magical
very
thing.
Rare, I think.
I guess, how do those values like come to life here? Like, tell us more about the Riveter. And
its
history, its background, what you guys believe in.
So the Riveter was founded by Amy Nelson, who I hope at some point you have the opportunity to witness in action because she's ridiculously compelling. Amy founded the company after she was a corporate litigator by trade. She told people she was pregnant, and suddenly there was a new perception of her. she was out on maternity leave with her second child and was looking at the accommodations available to her as a mom needing to find a way to manage everything,
right,
and just felt incredibly under-supported and said, this is not working for me. The way corporate America is built does not satisfy the needs of what we know is 86% of the female population. I mean, 86% of women over the age of 30 will or have had a child. So we're talking majority here, and it's not something she had given much thought to until she was faced with it and then realized, whoa, A, I should have been thinking about this prior. B, what the hell am I going to do? So she quit her job because she had the means to be able to do so in the name of starting her own business. And as she was, fully admits she's type A. She's like, I don't have an MBA. I only have a JD, which of course I roll my eyes at.
Yeah.
Only a JD. You know, she's just an attorney. So she started taking these like business plan 101 classes, and all the places where she was finding these classes were traditional co-working spaces, and all of the, she felt that the trappings were very male. She realized, oh, I guess I have a business idea. And thus the Riveter was born. And from that origin to now, it's been, so we're in the flagship location, which opened exactly 2 years ago. We now have 8 locations open across the country.
That's amazing.
It is really amazing. Exciting. Yeah, yeah. And the rate at which we're growing is a little whiplash inducing, actually, in the best possible way. Yeah. But the real, the core of our business, our tagline is built by women for everyone. We are totally inclusive of everyone, but we will always center women's needs, not only in the physical trappings of how we build the spaces and how we set the climate, et cetera, but also we offer events and programming that are really intended to address all the various needs women in their work lives may have.
So cool.
It's fantastic.
What do you think, like, what's your point of view on specifically what you guys offer your audience that maybe other co-working spaces don't have?
We talk about it as you join the Riveter, you rent from a traditional co-working space. Yeah. And then the programming and community aspect is the other major differentiator. It's really trying to address the full scope of what people may need in their work lives.
That's awesome. So the kind of idea, like, I feel like WeWork is like really pushing into having giant companies now just renting out their spaces.
Yep.
That just doesn't seem to align with, nope, with this space, because it seems very community oriented.
It is. I mean, really at the heart of what we're doing, co-working is absolutely an important part of our business. But at the heart of what we're doing, we are trying to build, we're trying to give space for communities to develop and for people to connect with one another and to gain the access to resources they might need. Maybe it's simply space, but maybe it's also salary negotiation tips or how to negotiate, right, your next contract. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're
so much more.
Yeah, we really are trying to cultivate business, but with an eye really toward women in business. And the individual member can determine what she needs.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, cool. Dana and I were having this conversation yesterday about when you work at a place, you kind of have to inherit its values. And that's like partly of the culture as well. Yeah. And that's a big choice in you working there. Sometimes office culture is kind of contrived, right? It's like beer pong and kegs and happy hours on Friday. And then that's all what culture is.
Right.
So I think it's really interesting. It's like, oh, now you have a space where you can work and your values are aligned in a way that's intentional and like expressive in this really amazing way.
And you're surrounded by other people that are aligned with those specific values as well.
And also getting the support you need, like salary, right, negotiation. Like why tools. Is that not a thing that can be taught to you at work? You know, like why is that not a thing? It seems kind of...
It's super interesting. It's like, is that going to force companies to start offering more?
Well, we actually have We sell corporate memberships to companies who want to provide their employees with access to our programming. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think the whole thrust of your podcast really is addressing the way things are changing overall. You know, looking at different categories, well, the way we work is changing. And the way we as workers are, what we're expecting of our companies is changing. Yep. Enlightened companies are realizing that they're losing their workforce to freelance and consulting economy and the gig economy. I mean, there are a lot of options for how people can work now. And so I just looking at it even from the straight business perspective, to retain your employees, you need to be offering resources and support that perhaps you as a company never offered in the past. So where we step in is we have all that programming ready to go and companies can offer it to their employees. And it's been really interesting watching that piece of our business develop. And it's actually, frankly, encouraging. Companies, I think, generally want to do best by their employees. I don't have a cynical view of what corporate America ultimately is. And it's just a matter of finding how to work with the new expectations of the workforce.
Right. Yeah. And you guys are providing an easy way for them to provide something for their employees. Like, you give them an easy way in.
Sounds like you guys might have a little suggestion to make at your place of business.
Uh-oh.
Dun, dun, dun.
Jeff, if you're listening.
Well, actually, so here's a question. So you are both, early-ish in your careers, and you have expectations of what a values-aligned workplace looks like.
Yep.
What do you need that?
Well,
I think for me, it's okay that your work doesn't fulfill all of those needs. And sometimes it's good to compartmentalize those things.
Right.
Honestly,
I, being a young in my career, what draws me to like what you guys are offering are the resources to learn stuff outside of my maybe specific niche industry. So like business stuff or, money stuff or whatever. It's just like learning as much as I can right now is extremely valuable. Mm-hmm. And so the more that they can offer opportunities to do so, we'll jump on them.
Yeah. For me, something like The Riveter, I think, provides a space where I can express like my womanhood, my like queerness, my like parents being like refugees. So like sometimes at work, those things, you can talk about them, but like sometimes you don't want to. Sometimes you don't want to put people in that position of like talking about it. So like having a space where that is, you can openly do that, and it's
encouraged.
I think it feels different, you know.
Yeah. I want to ask you about the expansion. It's been a big expansion very quickly, super exciting. What has been the most challenging part? What have you learned?
Oh, God.
Sorry, it's a big question.
It is a big question. Okay, so we were simply in LA and Seattle with multiple locations in each. And then this year we've opened Austin and Dallas. Minneapolis opens next week. And then we go to Portland and Denver. It's so super cool. Exciting. Yeah, I mean, it's, I think the most wonderful part about it has been discovering communities in each of those communities. We hire people from the local communities because it has to be
authentic.
Yeah, well, they have to lead the charge on here's what Austin's about and here's what Austin's needs are, and then that community develops around itself.
Right.
And we from Seattle, from the headquarters, simply try our best to support what that market needs. I think the hardest part has been we didn't really have a playbook for this, and so we're developing it now.
Yeah.
And with each location opening, we're learning, we're optimizing. We're we're trying to figure out, well, what's the formula to come into a new market and attract community?
So as we expand into these markets, I feel like there are other women kind of focused co-working spaces mm-hmm. opening up. What is your take on that?
Awesome.
Great.
Amazing. Yeah, awesome. I mean, there is plenty of room for all of us, and it's testament to the fact that there's demand for it.
Absolutely. I mean,
we are all wanting
a need for it.
Yeah, we want something different than what we've had available to us in the past. And I mean, it's interesting looking across the table from you two. I mean, I'm in my mid-40s, and earlier in my career, I just was used to being in male-dominated industries, and I just figured out how to deal with it. And it never occurred to me that you would have a community where you would talk about that, or that the workspace that you would choose, well, that you could even choose your workspace.
Yeah.
And that you could make demands. It just wasn't a thing that I thought about. So yeah.
It's an exciting time, honestly, to be a woman in the workforce, I think.
It's really, I mean, it's cool when I contemplate for women who are in your stage of your careers, that you are dealing with a totally different array of questions, and you're making demands based on your values that it's freaking cool.
Yeah, I like struggle with like this Silicon Valley idea of benefits and perks of like free lunch and like free laundry, free gym, free all this stuff. And like basically I'm just like, I want like work-life balance. I want, you know, healthcare. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to take maternity leave or, absolutely. You know, like adoption leave when I need it.
Yeah.
And like, I just want to like live my life as a full person. And I
can take care of my laundry.
Yeah.
Like that makes one of us.
But it's so true.
I would die for some free laundry. Amy, if you're listening, we need free laundry.
I mean, it's nice, but I think it's interesting. Like, our generation is asking for different things. Like, we want to be learning stuff and just have what we need to live, like, a stable, happy life, healthy life.
Yeah, and I think maybe, can you go into, like, the perks or the benefits of the Riveter? Just, like, the full gamut? Because some people do want, you know...
Yeah.
Beer or kombucha on tap. Some people just want quiet space in the corner. Some people like are like, I want to go to all the events. So how do you accommodate everyone?
Well, we don't have any beverages on tap. So we'll start there. And that's not to say we never would, but I can't really see why we would, to be honest. I mean, really, what our core premise is, we take women and their business lives seriously. And we do everything we can to provide all the physical accommodations necessary to make that possible. So, and in some ways, kind of basic offerings. It's conference room space that's bookable and available for your use with all the appropriate amenities in the conference rooms.
Right.
Not particularly glamorous, but it's key.
You need it.
Well, yeah, totally. And I mean, big open spaces with comfortable seating, with variety of seating options, kitchens. I mean, our snack offerings are minimal. We do have coffee. That's great.
We're drinking it. It's delicious.
The thing that drives Seattle.
Yeah. Yes, it you is the have, thing that drives, yeah. well, it drives all business, yes. really. Let's
yeah.
be real.
Yeah.
But I think the thing that is the most interesting offering we have is the access to resources like the office hours I was mentioning. I mean, it's pretty freaking cool if you are starting a business and you have no idea how you should fund your business or what even the options
Absolutely.
Are. You can talk to some of the best minds in the business in a completely unintimidating format and get advice. And I find that to be, and our members find that
way more valuable.
Well, yeah. And the programming as well. I mean, salary negotiation, we do a lot of diversity, equity, and inclusion programming. And that is so, it's invaluable, really. And mm-hmm. it's not to say, oh, aren't we so wonderful that we're offering these things? It's kind of like, well, this is our whole reason for being.
It's like the baseline, what you guys are founded on.
Yeah.
You're starting with this extreme mission of supporting women, and then everything comes back to that. Like, are we doing that? Like, what do they need? And then providing them what they need.
You said it perfectly.
I have, I guess, one final big question is, like, what is the dream for the Riveter? And, like,
the future,
what, 5 years, or just, like, the ultimate goal?
Well, I mean, the ultimate goal is we see a world in which equity of opportunity is a reality and not merely a promise. And that is the frickin' moonshot. We are interested in seeing the VC funding numbers shifting. We're interested in seeing parental leave policy shifting and it becoming more of a part of conversation. We are bound and determined to do everything we can to prove that this kind of business is actually great business, because that begets more business. The whole point of this is to start bringing the work world to a better place of equity of opportunity for everyone. We've devoutly been inclusive of men and all on the gender spectrum since day one, because really, men specifically, we need participating in this.
Mm-hmm. Right. This is not, everyone needs to get behind it.
Totally. And the gender pay gap actually deeply impacts all genders. And most men really are not interested in having such an imbalanced system.
We can't wait to see the growth, and just so lucky to talk to you now, and we can look back and...
Oh, God.
And just...
Oh, my gosh. Well, I mean, hopefully we'll be seeing you around here more.
No, I'd love that.
Because this place is for you.
Thank you.
Have at it.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Listen up.
Number one.
Programming is a game changer.
Game changer.
And by programming, we mean co-working spaces are providing some really great events.
And opportunities, as we learned talking to Carrie.
Yeah. How to negotiate your pay, how to deal with your finances.
If you're an entrepreneur, like having resources to help you learn how to succeed.
We even heard that, you know, some people in the WeWork spaces, some of the events are very chill, you know.
Like happy hours.
Yeah, happy hours, or a new bakery coming in and sharing their treats.
Yeah, and these educational opportunities can be fun like that. And they can be events that really do help boost your company culture.
Company culture, even if you don't work at a company, even if you work with a bunch of strangers who don't work at the same company.
It's for everybody.
That's pretty crazy to me. Like,
yeah.
Creating culture when you guys are not working towards the same goal. It's such a... interesting way to look at work.
It's completely new. It's never existed before.
Some people take advantage of the culture provided and some people don't. And that's very normal in kind of regular office spaces. But it's interesting how much more intentional these spaces have to be about building culture.
Yep.
Whereas, you know, some companies are just like, hey, we work together, so this is our culture.
Number two, flexibility.
So flexibility, this is going to flex in a couple different ways. I think the first one is that people work differently and people are more productive at different times of day.
Everybody's different.
Some people need to wake up and, you know, go to work at 6 or 7 a.m. so they can drop their kids off and see them after school.
Right.
Some people like me and Dana.
Not morning people.
Really struggle to make it out the door by 8:30.
Yeah. I literally wake up at 8 o'clock. Oh, man. But that's okay.
Yeah.
Companies should understand that and allow for flexibility in their employee schedule so that they are most productive in their job. Also, people have different work styles, and that requires flexibility. Everybody has different needs, and I think the design of your space can really accommodate everyone's needs if you do it correctly.
Yeah, our office does a very good job at that.
Yeah,
we just moved into a new office. It was designed by Olson Kundig. It's
humble brag.
It's beautiful. But our space allows for people to work collaboratively. We have crit walls, but also to work, you know, solo.
Yeah, so there's community space in the middle, and then around that are really awesome little crit niches that have pinnable space so people can make mood boards on them or pin up their work and chat about it. And then on the outside layer, there's the personal desks. So you can, if you really need to focus, you can sit at your desk and put headphones on and just work. Or you can sit in one of the booths that we actually have as well.
I love the booths.
Yeah, we meet in the booths a lot. But it just shows you how variety like can really accommodate everybody, because we have writers who prefer quiet at our office as well. And then we have people like you and I who like to bounce ideas mm-hmm. and need to chat through stuff. Number three, reflect. So everybody has personal goals and ambitions for their life. Like when I graduated, I really wanted to save the planet with sustainable design and make things that were meaningful for all people, people of all abilities. And I think when you start in the workforce, sometimes you can lose sight of those personal goals. And it might be because things are like tight on timeline, or the nature of the project isn't maybe something you would have chosen for yourself. But I think it's a great challenge and something we should remind ourselves to do, to like integrate our passion into our current job if it's applicable. My point isn't that you should quit your job, because, I mean, that's not practical for everybody or whatever, but that you should just take ownership and don't lose sight of the things you want to achieve and find fulfillment in.
I think it's really hard to find a job that completely and totally aligns with your values. And sometimes as a person, you need that in some way. Like for me, it's, you know, being a queer person, being a person of color, being a woman. Sometimes I need support that not everyone at my work can give to me. And I think that's something really interesting about these value-based co-working spaces, is that if my values align with theirs and they provide programming that can help me out.
Yeah, supports that, you.
That's going to be so great for me as a worker.
Yeah.
And that's going to be so great for my employer, who will get a better, more full person out of me.
Yeah.
If I get to go to these things.
Absolutely. And I think that's a point that is important to make, that it's in the best interest really for everybody if we live balanced lives and are pursuing everything we want to pursue.
And that's our episode. So what do you think? Are we killing office spaces?
Nope. If anything, we're saving them.
What we want is work to be part of our lives, but not all of our lives. And you're seeing a giant shift to remote and freelance working because traditional work is not providing that. We're making our own roles and making work work for us.
Work for everybody.
See you next time.
Bye.
This podcast is produced by Hornell Anderson. Artwork by Damien Bertels. Sound design and editing by Katie Schultz. With marketing support from Amber Johnson, Britt Stromberg, Stephanie Downs, Claudia Cicero, Jacob Toby, and Tim Garrison.